Celia, it's been far too long. Mwah. That is great. Isn't that much better than just, you know, thinking people are raining on your parade, where we stand up, we make a choice, and we just let my light shine. Just get yourself out of my way. I'm going to shine. I'm going to shine today. Good morning. Wow, it's really good to see you again. Well, I've been busy in some of the most unexpected ways, and that's the way life happens sometimes. And so I wanted to tell you that Hugh sends his love, and yesterday we transferred him into a rehab center. So he's making improvement. He's not well enough to come home, but he needs some antibiotic IVs around the clock that I just don't want to do it by myself. So he's going to spend a little bit of time in a much freer place than where he's been, and so we're happy about that. It was kind of an exciting day. It was a little hard to sleep last night because it's like, oh, yay, it's something new. So if you're interested in more of the details, we posted, Sue Witter wrote a beautiful piece that posted the details. My problem is I get hung up in the effect of it. If you come to me and you ask me how he's doing and I start telling you, I'm going down the wrong road because I want to let my light shine. I want that stuff out of my way for a little while so I can remember truth. And that's what I'm here to do today, to talk to you about the truth and about, you know, what happens when you're living your life and something seems to get in your way. Because I can tell you, I really could easily feel like a victim. In the last many weeks, I have felt like, hey, did you write that song just for this talk title? It just dawned on me. The title of the message is Getting Out of Our Own Way.
I went to the website and I checked
it. Yay! That is so cool. That is so cool. I hadn't made the connection yet. So I wanted to talk about the way we get in our own way, especially when it looks like things are ganging up on us, when you hit one or two or three things in a row, and then it's like, wow, how do I find my balance? Do you ever notice that happens? It's like several things go wrong at the same time. I have this fabulous story that I tell when I'm teaching, and it's a true story that happened when my children were young and we were getting ready to go spend Thanksgiving weekend with the grandparents, and everything was going wrong. The dryer had died. I have four little kids and tons of laundry. We strung ropes in the backyard to dry the laundry off, and then it started to rain. And so now I'm out trying to get the laundry in, and then one of the kids comes running in the house. Mom, there's water all over the floor. Something's leaking in the refrigerator. And the refrigerator had died, and then I was kind of having that moment of going crazy, and I'm trying to get everything in order. I have the kids running all over the neighborhood with bags of groceries to try and save our food in our refrigerator, you know, in our neighbors' homes, and so while they're doing that, I pulled out the vacuum, and my husband goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, I just want it to look nice when we get home. This is too much chaos. So I'm pushing the vacuum, vacuuming, and all of a sudden, and he's leaning on the door like this, like he's got the kids in the car by now. He's looking at me, and he goes, and he's just watching, and then all of a sudden, the vacuum goes, poof, and there's this little fire in the vacuum, and my husband came, and he pulled the cord out, you know, the hero, pulls the cord out of the wall, he slides the big sliding glass door open, and he took the vacuum, and he threw it into the backyard, and he looked at me, and he said, "Get in the car." So that happened 30, 35 years ago, and recently we've had this, you know, he's been in and out of the hospital, and one day my car battery died, you know, 2 weeks ago the garbage disposal went out, my car battery died here in the church parking lot, and I had to get Hugh to a doctor's appointment, and it was just a riot. We were just like, you know, it was just kind of funny, and so at the end of the day, we came back here to get my car, the battery replaced in the car, and Hugh was sitting in the truck, and he's not feeling good. He's not feeling good at all, and he looks at me. I said, "Honey, just go home and go to take a nap. Go home." And he looks at me, and he goes, "Don't vacuum." Isn't that great? I love that. that. He said, not got many words right now, but he said to me, don't vacuum. So I didn't. I didn't. And I want to talk about that. I know, right? Right? Because that's what happens is sometimes we go to war with that stuff. You know, it's like, oh, my life is crazy. I'm just going to do this one more thing. When already you're in that zone where it's probably, you know, not going to turn out as well as it could if we would do the inner work instead of trying to fix out the outer realm of effect. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. I'm very excited about our theme for the year. I'm looking again this year at how wonderful our philosophy, our teaching is, and that this is a really relevant place to go. And so to make it really relevant, I didn't plan on it, but it's going to be very fitting to tie in all of that with what I want to say. So I've been growing a lot lately. How about you? Anybody else out here growing a lot lately? Yeah. Life challenges us sometimes. And one of the beautiful things we can learn to do is to not just get beat up with life. It almost reminds me of the attitude of that song you just did, get out of my way. You know, if there's something that happens in me where I can feel kind of like, oh, no. Oh, that didn't happen, and then suddenly I'll feel my spiritual truth, you know, just kind of kick in. Some kind of crazy light starts shining and scolding me, like, you know better, Miss Karen. Look at you, you're a minister. You know how to do this stuff. You got some skills. And so I always stomp my foot and go, enough. Enough, and that's my interpretation of what you're singing there. So it's when we consciously recognize we're in that space, and we draw a line in the sand, and we change our mind, and we make a new choice, and then wonderful things happen when we're able to do that. So I think that life itself is really a series of all of our experiences. And we certainly look at our lives and we can see how we have grown through our experiences. And in fact, I know that all of you will relate in your own ways, but you know, I look at, like, you know, in 1972, I became a mom for the first time. You know, all I ever wanted to do was be a mom, and I had my first baby in 1972, and so that was a life-changing moment, you know? And then in 1995, I had this amazing opportunity to go on this extravagant spiritual, what do you call it? Pilgrimage, a spiritual pilgrimage all over Southeast Asia, and it was an extraordinary experience, and I'm now living in a different culture and seeing life through different eyes and dabbling in different spiritual traditions. It was the most incredible year ever. It changed my life completely, and then by 2004, I was primed to hear the call to ministry. Right? So you know how that is in your life. You've got things. They're like markers where you know everything you did in your life before that and then how that changed the projection of your life and the direction you would go next. I also remember that in 1998, my mother died. And that was the first loss we'd had in our family. It was my first experience with something like that. And then in 2001, the world changed when the towers fell. So we have these markers, and they look like we could name them good and beautiful and wonderful and horrible and tragic. But when you put them all together, we can see that there are experiences that are always occurring, things that are always unfolding, and those experiences shape us. They impact us. Sometimes they change the way we think. Now, that could be good, and that's the way we approach it from a science of mind perspective, is how can we stay in choice when we're feeling rather victimized in life, because there's a way. But the other side of what we choose sometimes is the opposite of good, and that is that when we feel vulnerable, we feel it's necessary to protect ourselves. And so sometimes we do that. If we've been hurt in a relationship or had an unfortunate financial experience, we will try and protect ourselves from that ever happening again. But what happens then is we start to put on armor, and that armor gets heavy, and ultimately that armor can separate us from each other and from a greater truth. Because the truth is that we all have equal opportunity and access to the divine intelligence of the universe at all times, no matter what we're going through. I was thinking as I wrote this message that I think it's that concern over our vulnerability that has made the recent news and all the chatter now about guns and the big divide we seem to be having. I think it's a beautiful example of how it's based on our sense of vulnerability. How can we protect ourselves or protect the children or in whatever way we're looking at it? And everybody has a different idea. And by the way, just not that it matters, but my thought is, I don't think we're going to figure that out, but I think the kids are. I think that I have been studying the millennial generation for some time now, and at first I just started studying that to see what was happening with the trend in church, because church is changing. The culture of church is changing, and people are leaning toward wanting a more spiritual experience as compared to a religious experience, or people are doing both. But the millennial generation is where we have gotten a lot of information. And what I think I see is that it is the people of that age and younger, because let's face it, they're stuck with this. This is their world now. And those are the ones where I expect great things can happen. You know my story if you know me. I know a couple of you don't know me yet. But I like to tell that story about the great horse manure crisis of 1894 or whatever it was, and how they thought it was the end of the world. And they're trying to figure out what to do with all that stuff. And it ended up that they didn't have to fix it because the automobile was created. And so something totally unconsidered came and sort of saved the day so that the world didn't end because of a bunch of, well, you know. And I would just add that it feels like that a lot. Whenever we're worried about the future of the planet or the shape of things as they are, it's a bunch of that stuff. And that there's another way for us to stand in truth and to move ahead. So controversy happens, and things happen in our life. And that's a really good question. You know, we ask, why do bad things happen? There are books titled that. You know, there are, every spiritual faith has their own approach as to trying to justify or explain or give us reasons as to how can we understand why bad things happen to good people. In fact, as we are training practitioners to be licensed counselors, spiritual counselors, that is a question they have to answer on their exam. Hint, hint, if any students are in the room. The question is, what is the role of illness in the life of humanity? And we as an organization answer that question this way. Illness is an outer expression of an inner imbalance, turmoil, or disharmony. Illness is a signal that an inner belief needs to be changed. Illness is sometimes a protection against a greater turmoil. Illness slows us down so that we have more time to devote to spiritual advancement. It is not of God, but the experience can draw us closer to God. And what I want to tell you is, you take that word illness out of it and put in any condition you are going through in your life, and you will see that it helps us make sense. So I think it was just a couple weeks ago when I was here speaking, I said, it's information. There's always information. Every condition you're moving through has information. And for me, it always feels like there's a light, a divine illumination, an inner light that is bringing me more information so that I can be more fully restored to my own sense of wholeness. Sometimes we say that rather than just looking at healing as if we're talking about cure. We're really talking about the way the life events that change us and shape us can really carry us through to a clear understanding of something that will enhance our life in such a way that our soul benefits. So as an organization, as a spiritual community, as us sitting here in the West Valley as a spiritual community, we know that we are a relevant place to grow because our teaching provides guidance. It provides practical spirituality with tools and methods. It's useful. It's successful if you apply it and use it. And it has very specific guidance that is life-changing. We know that. And it's so gorgeous how it is a healing faith based on the idea of oneness and connection, to not only to God, but to each other. So what I think happens when we're talking about when tough things happen is that some of us want to study all of this because then all that bad stuff won't happen to you, almost like an insurance. You know, you're going to come and learn a lot of things so that you don't have to have any bad things happen. You not only get great parking spaces and green lights, but you get healed and you get rich and you find your soulmate and all those things that the movie The Secret sort of got everybody excited. It was great for us when that movie came out because, the pews were filled then. But the people that are looking for the magic and the quick fix didn't stick around because there's work to do. Right? Because there's a way we not only have these skills, these tools, but it's a very personalized, individualized journey where we each have our own relationship to how we're going to practice it and use it. So the place where we get into trouble with sort of the problems in life is when we have a belief that we shouldn't have any problems in our life. I love that scripture in Ecclesiastes. I actually like it better than the 23rd Psalm. Ecclesiastes says, time and unforeseen occurrence befall us all. So the question is, what do you want to do about it? You know, what do we want to do about it? If we have a strong opinion that bad things shouldn't happen, then it's going to throw you pretty sideways. And it's easy then to feel victimized. Or the interesting thing I hear here a lot in this community or in the teaching in general is we're very quick to go, what did I do to create this? You know, and it's a good question because, we don't want to create it anymore, right? But the question can never be why, because there's a flavor of resistance in that. There's just this hint of not accepting that it's like you're still trying to imagine it didn't happen. So here, I'll be honest, sometimes my line is like, but I'm a good person. Really, I know I'm a good person. Why is this happening like this, right? Well, that's, can you see how we're now turning the belief against ourselves? Now I'm using this. I'm thinking if I can figure out where I messed up and I can figure out the why, I won't do it again. But that's just looking for more armor to put on. Why is not the relevant question? Instead of asking why, I am training myself always, because it's an ongoing process, isn't it, to say instead something like, okay, what's here for me to look at right now? Where am I not open to the kind of change that I'm being pulled through right now? Because life is about change. How is life growing me? Where am I healing? Something in me is desiring to be healed so that I can have a consciousness that is even clearer than where I have been. Because we always are going to, I always say our consciousness is cumulative. It's always growing. And so, you know, there's that beautiful way we can ask ourselves, is there another way of seeing this? And when I'm most vulnerable, I have no problem dropping to my knees and saying, Lord, show me what I can't see right now. Show me. So in that, there is an invitation, almost a willingness. It fuels a willingness for me to see it in a different way and whatever's going on. But the why will keep me stuck, and it will probably keep you stuck too. I just noticed these things. I think the difference between why and how can I see this differently is the way in which it creates an opening for us. So what it does for me is, it's like I'm trying to do everything. I'm controlling it, figuring it out. I'm going to make the right decisions, and I'm going to move through every day, and I'm going to do what I have to do, and I'm going to call somebody to pray with me if I can't even form the words of a prayer myself, and I'm going to look for the support I need. But it opens me. What else? How else could I look at this? It opens me. It's like getting lost. You're out driving around, and it wasn't that long ago, if you got lost on a trip or something, you would pull over on the side of the road because you had to open this big map, right? I never could figure out how to fold them back closed again. But you'd look at this big map, and you try and estimate where you're at so that you can maneuver your way to where you want to be. And so for me, that moment where I quit trying to fix it, where I quit trying to rearrange things in the outer realm of effect, turn to that indwelling presence, that is the opportunity for me to take a breath, pull over on the side of the road, and pull out my map, or punch in an address in the Garmin or in your phone, you know, and MapQuest it. But you need to pull over for that stuff. Doesn't it make you crazy when you see somebody texting while it looks like they're texting, and I think we're using MapQuest probably a lot of times. It's not safe to do that. When we ask for help, when we open to help, we have to be open to receive it so that we're not in that position of still trying to control everything. So when you feel lost or frightened, it's easy to miss your own shenanigans that are unfolding and see how we impose suffering on ourselves when we're doing that. If you are suffering, then it's hard to breathe, you know? It's hard to inhale. If you are suffering, you are likely stuck in the very worst what-if scenario in your mind, and you're not utilizing the tools and the skills that you have. You know, this teaching, I love that it is called, we are centers for spiritual living. Before that, we were religious science. Our teaching is called the science of mind, but I think a lot of people think it's magic of the mind. It's not, it's science. It's predictable. It's a methodology. It can be used, and nobody does that better than religious scientists in terms of applying practical application. We have a very specific way we pray. And so notice that it's not about magical thinking. It's about training our minds in a precise way, and that the more we practice, the sharper we get at it, and then we're equipped to move through stuff. So it doesn't mean that I'm having a real good time the last couple of weeks, but it means that I know how to do this, and that I'm reminded that I'm surrounded by people that can stand in that truth with me, so that when I forget or when I have a really scary day, I still have that substance, that consciousness that's supporting me, that allows me to remember that I have everything I need to get through, whatever I have to get through, and we all do. I think I said it a couple weeks ago, but we're so much more than a positive thinking movement. Yes, thank you. Oh my gosh, we are so much more than a teaching that says don't dwell in the negative. Yes, that's part of it. But when you really get to the nuts and bolts of it, what we're talking about is being intentional in the way that we live, in being conscious, in being awake, in being willing to feel our fear, our pain, or whatever it is, and to take those steps anyway. It doesn't mean it's a miraculous shift, though it can be, and certainly that does happen to me quite often, especially when I've asked people to pray for me. I have moments in the day where I can just feel a little peace, just a little peace wash over me, and that's a beautiful thing. But don't forget that it is indeed the difficult times and situations that grow us and that grow our faith the most. Yesterday, I was having a moment. I went to the elevator. I was on the fifth floor of Boswell, and I went to the elevator to go downstairs and just have a little break. And as I pushed the button, and I'm waiting, and there was a nurse behind me. You know, at Boswell, they have this gorgeous, on the north ends, the rounds that are north, these gorgeous view of the entire valley. It was quite exquisite. And good afternoon sunshine, and that sometimes we would go out there just to, you know, breathe a little bit. So I push the elevator button, and there's a nurse on her break behind me, and she's talking on her cell phone. She dials out, and she says, "Hey, girl, how you doing?" And then you could hear the other person must have said, "I'm great, how are you?" And this is what she said. This tickled me so much, because all I can hear is her side of the story. She goes, "Girl, I did what the Lord called me to do today. I got out of bed." Isn't that great? I did what the Lord called me to do today. I got out of bed. And then she laughed and laughed and laughed. And she said, "Yes, I got out of bed. And then I got myself here to work. And so what I know for sure is because I did what the Lord called me to do is that everything's going to be okay." Isn't that a sweet message for me to just overhear at a time where I really needed to hear it? So, you know, we are provided for. Do not think that we are not. Everything's going to be okay, she said. I did what the Lord asked. I thought, well, I did that too. I got out of bed. I'm here. I have thought a lot about how frequently I comment on what a great privilege it is to, as a minister, and someone who longs for this lifestyle and to be hang out with people like you all the time, you know, people that are hungry to talk about spiritual matters. I often say that I have such an enchanted life because I feel like I'm really living my life on purpose. So I thought I would say that to you and ask you to think about this for a moment. Is it possible to live your life on purpose and still go through difficult times? Of course it is. Of course it is. It doesn't have to change the direction of your life unless that's why you're going through it, because you need to change the direction of your life. We say in seminary, they always said, God doesn't call the qualified. God qualifies the called. Isn't that powerful? And so I would ask you to think about that in your own life and in those situations where you're going through stuff you think you don't know how to go through, because that's what I hear myself saying sometimes at night, like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to get up tomorrow and get there again. You know, well, God doesn't put you through this because you're qualified. God's going to qualify you because you're up for it. And we have to be open to it. We're in choice. We get to play in it at that level we want. So living on purpose means that we're skilled to do what we need to do and that stuff happens and all of that is okay. All of that is part of the whole. And when I was writing this, I was thinking about I read this in the 80s. This is M. Scott Peck's The Road Less Traveled. How many of you have read this book? Look at all of us. We teethed on it back then, right? It was our teething ring. And the most powerful thing about this book, I have a bookshelf, by the way, in my office, one shelf devoted to the books that I believe most changed my life. And there's 12 to 15 books up there, and this is one of the books I keep right there. And the interesting thing about this book is the very first chapter is called Problems and Pain. And the first sentence has three words: life is difficult. And I think it's kind of a stunning way to begin a book, but this is what he says in that first paragraph. Life is difficult. This is a great truth. It is one of the greatest truths. It is a great truth because once we see this clearly, we can transcend it. Once we truly know that life has difficulties and we understand and we accept that, see, that's where I suffer, is when I resist it. It's like, not me, not my life. Once we understand it and accept it, then life is no longer difficult, because once accepted, the fact that it's difficult doesn't matter. Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it? He also says in this book that most people, this is going to make me laugh, most people incessantly moan about the enormity of their problems, as if their life should be different than that. But problems don't go away. They must be worked through, or they will remain a barrier to the growth of your spirit. And that's what I want to say today. You know, it's okay to be scared. It's okay to hate that you have to walk through a certain situation, but there's something that happens when we open ourselves to ask again, what's another way of seeing this, of moving through it? And when we do that, possibilities expand. It's an incredible thing. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this philosophy, said that, oh, this is such a good quote, I love this. This, I think, is going to be the theme of my relevancy project that I've been working on for a year. Holmes says, life is a principle of emergence. It presses us into expression. Sometimes I think those desires of our heart, those yearnings for peace, for don't get out of my way, you know, don't rain on my parade, all of those things. That's life pressing us into expression. So what do you want to express? How would you like that to look? When life feels difficult, it simply means that we are in a position to grow, that something better is trying to be revealed in our life, something is trying to heal. In some way, we are being restored to our sanity or our wholeness or our center. It is a principle of emergence. I love that. And I love that because I think that's what is going on in the world right now. Every ugly thing we do not like looking at is just life trying to recreate itself in a better way because things aren't working the way they have been. Holmes says, there is no divine purpose to accomplish, but rather there is a divine nature to express. And that's what we teach here, is we take the skills and we learn how to express peace and love and joy and order and harmony and all of those God qualities. Those are the yearnings that are pressing up against us, that desire to be expressed through us and be presented into the world. And one of the things that grows us more than anything else is our concept of God. What you believe about God will show up in the way you relate to life. Holmes also said that the starting point of theology is to define God. The very concept of God must be broadened away from the limitations of human personality. We have to quit making God like us. We are created in the image and likeness of Spirit. That means there is so much more that we cannot see, that we don't know, but we can sense. And every encounter we have in life that deepens our faith reveals a little more of that to us. And that's the growth of the soul. That's the work that we're here to do while we're living on this planet. So we need a bigger idea of what God is. You got big problems in your life? You need to make your God bigger than those problems. Right? We got problems in this world and things going on we don't like. We need to make our God bigger than all those problems. Nothing is hopeless. Nothing is confined or doomed, because life doesn't have the capacity to stop. Life is eternal in every way. Always expanding, always changing. We don't have to like it, you know, but life is for us, not against us. I think that I see us gravitate. This is all about my relevance project that I'll be sharing with you in weeks to come. But I've done all this research, and what I'm seeing is that we are gravitating toward a new spirituality, one where it's not going to be so divided. I mean, I think we will always have religions, and I think that's a great thing, because there's such beauty in the way that we worship from different religious points of view. But we're moving into a new idea of spirituality. I think even atheists are, don't tell them, but I think they're extremely spiritual people who just have issues with some of the rules and the dogma of religion. So we are seekers. And for thousands of years, humankind has sought to understand why we have these problems happen in our life. And we have looked out there, and what I want to say is the time has come for us to really embrace the Jesus message. Jesus showed us something that we still don't seem to get, but that it's not out there, that there is an indwelling presence. And we can't just keep trying to move things around in the outer realm of effect. We have to turn within to that divine wisdom, where that infinite intelligence always is, to remember again there is no place where God is not. And, I'm going to tell you something. Everybody's talking about it. Now, about a year ago, I thought I received some kind of divine revelation. You know, I'm going to do this relevancy project. And I dug into all this research, and I just knew I wasn't sure why God was nudging me into this. But unfortunately, as I unraveled all my research, I found that people have been talking about this for years. There's nothing about it that's new. Neil Donald Walsh, I'm having such a good time with an old book he wrote called Tomorrow's God. Tomorrow's God. One I like even better is The Storm Before the Calm. Neil Donald Walsh. Did I miss him? He's going to be in town. Did I miss it? Anybody know? It got canceled? Oh, I'm sorry that happened. I love his, he has such a fresh take. He said, life is the word that comes closest to what we mean when we seek to express the idea of God. Life is the word that comes closest to what we mean. So you say God to some people, and they have this whole different, their head goes in a different direction as to what God means to them. But when we talk about life as that infinite intelligence, now we're broadening it out. Life is the stuff that God is. Walsh also says, tomorrow's God is not a new God. It's a new understanding, an expanded concept, and most important, hear this carefully, most important, it is a deeper awareness and experience of God. Man, I harp on this all the time, because I can talk and talk and talk, but until you are open to have your own experience of it, it'll only be words. The great theologian Martin Buber said, God is more than an abstract idea. God is an alive, personal counterpart that meets people in immediate relationship. And this is where I want to end this morning. That's what I think Jesus came to show us. You know, the Jesus story, Emma Curtis Hopkins calls it the Jesus method. The message of what I call the elder brother Jesus is an overall message. It wasn't about bringing us a proper theology or a new religion. I don't think it had anything to do with that. I think that Jesus came to show us the way to have a relationship. And when Jesus spoke of God in a tender way, he called him Father or Abba, and they translate that as like Papa. It was very tender. So here we have this gorgeous example, this invitation to find a tenderness, a new way to relate to this spiritual understanding that Jesus had and demonstrated and attempted to teach. And it's not about obeying rules, and it's not about pitting religions against each other. It's not about anything right or wrong. It's about the way we love, the way we forgive, and the way we can really open ourselves to a more intimate and personal relationship with God, which in turn will bring us intimacy with each other. So whatever your problems may be, whether it's a loved one's illness or a health concern of your own, it's financial or family bickering or another tragic headline in the news, just remember that life grows us. Life is pressing us into new expression. Just ask, how is life growing me today? What else is going on? Or fall to your knees and say, Lord, show me. Take a nice deep breath. We're going to move into the sacred words of prayer. Like to call the practitioners forward at this time. So just get yourself comfortable where you are seated and know that there has been something spoken this day that is just for you. And whatever has been seated in your consciousness this morning, stay open. Nurture new possibilities. For I know that right where we are, God is. Here in this very room, deep at the center of every human being, God. I feel the love of God within me, and I recognize it as that activity of life, that movement that fuels our physical being. It is the way the air breathes our lungs and that gorgeous kiss of spirit that gave us the breath of life. It is all the beauty in the universe and the way things move in perfect harmony, each thing with the next thing. It is the way the night birds sing when I drive down Thunderbird. It is the way the sun sets over the white tanks. It is the way the planets move in perfect orbit and never bump into each other. It is this great demonstration of life and the infinite intelligence of all the universe. And all of that intelligence, that wisdom is within us. It is why the human body knows how to heal what ails it. And so this morning I speak a word of blessing. This powerful word of prayer that stimulates something within us. It activates the cells of our bodies so that we are quickened to recognize the movement of love. It is the Spirit within. It is the indwelling presence. It is that desire of good to be expressed on this planet in many multiple ways, in innumerable ways. And we feel within us something that shifts and moves so that we rise. We rise to a higher perspective. We find a way to see what's good right now, right in front of us. We find that way to forgive and to accept those who have harmed us or hurt us in any way. We recognize our connection. We see that all of us are vulnerable, and yet all of us are powerful. And we dare to stand together and envision a world that works for all. And so I know that there is a healing going on even now. That there is that infinite intelligence, that movement of love, that essence of beauty and power and goodness. And I stand aligned to these truths. I stand firm for this community to know that that goodness is the flow of the Holy Spirit through us, expressing as us, and that we all have everything we need to meet our needs and beyond. For love is the most powerful force in the universe. So I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. I am so grateful. So very, very grateful. And I release the words of this prayer into the divine law that assures all is well. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.